on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition, July 14th, of InvestTalk. I appreciate you being with me to July 14th, 2015. Month of July is almost half over. That's pretty interesting. That's pretty fast. I thank you for joining us today on the radio, online streaming, and, of course, all the podcast listeners that subscribe to us. I do appreciate that. This is an audience participation program, so I would appreciate, I really would love to have you ask your questions and make your comments. I also want to keep in tune with what's on your mind, not what's on my mind, but what's on yours. I'll share with you what's on my mind, but it's always, I think it makes for a more interesting show and better feedback when you are part of the show and what's on your mind. According to a study by Dalbar's Quantitative Analysts of Investor Behavior, that's a mouthful, published in MarketWatch.com, the average investor in a blend of equities and fixed income mutual funds has a total return of 2.6% net annualized for the last 10 years. 2.6% return net per year. So why is that? According to the same study, investors make poor investment choices that hurt their investment returns. These decisions, including when to buy and sell, are often driven by emotion. How many times have I said that? Two emotions drive the market, fear and greed. The real tragedy is that because of these mistakes, these bad decisions, the losses become almost insurmountable. And you've heard me talk about this. And I've talked about, if the market goes down 50%, you have to have a 100% return just to get even. So it's very important how much losses you take. And I'm not talking about trying to time the market or anything like that. I'm just saying we want to hedge ourselves or be careful about the downside. Investing your own money is a very difficult thing to do. And to properly invest, you need an emotional detachment from your own money. You need to say, that's not my money, and pretend it's not your money, and just make decisions based on what's smart. And most people can't do that. Many advisors have trouble doing that. Removing your feelings, your gut feelings from the equation. It's difficult. Remember, advisors are at the mercy of their clients. Some clients say, I want out, the advisors get them out. And then even if the advisor thinks it's not a good idea, they can't talk their clients into staying. And if they try, they feel that the advisor is giving them bad advice. Happens a lot. And after the market heads back up, usually it's too late. And then you jump back in. And that's why there's very poor returns. You sell at the bottom. And the average investor will sell at the bottom and then start buying after the market has recovered. No one knows where the bottom is. No one knows where the top is. It's very, very difficult. So I'm here to see if we can't break that cycle, to give you some perspective and confidence in your money choices. So let's get to work answering some questions. Our number is 888-99-CHART. We'll take this question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Steve. This is Mike from Reno. And I had a question about when you're screening for stocks, what kind of values do you put in your screen? Like, I know you want debt to return on equity to be over 17%. What kind of growth do you usually look at? And I was just wondering what kind of values you plug in. Anyway, thanks. Love the show. Bye.
Okay. Well, first you have to start with a goal. Is your goal for growth stocks or is your goal for income stocks? Is your goal for stability? See, so first of all, so if you're going to say, let's, I don't want to not answer the question. So let's say we're screening for growth stocks. Well, you want, as you say, return on equity on 17% or higher. You like the growth rate to be twice the PE ratio. Okay, twice the PE ratio. You want sales growth and earnings growth to be very high compared to the PE. Now, you're still looking for stocks to make money. I don't ever look for stocks that don't make money. So you're looking for growth stocks. So your target, your main objective is growth. And so that's where you're looking. You're not looking for value. You're not looking for a cheap stock. You're not. You're looking for growth. If that is your goal, growth. So you don't want a lot of debt. If you do have a lot of debt, that debt has to be used for growth, buying another company, putting a new factory in, doing something to keep growth going. Okay, I'll give you an example. Tesla would be a growth stock. They're spending a lot of money to continue to grow. So that's if you told me, I do like also on growth stocks an increasing margins, not a shrinkage of margins. That's not a good sign. In other words, profit margins are going up. But if you're looking for income stocks, you look for and a growth stocks, you're probably looking for small to mid cap size companies. In income stocks, you're looking for mid to large cap companies that pay high dividends and can support their dividends. And in an income stock, I would like a payout ratio of 60% or less. In other words, 60% of their earnings are paid out in a dividend or less than 60%. I don't want them to pay more than that. So there's different things that you're looking for depending on the stock that you want. Okay? There's not one clear-cut answer. That's all there is to it. When the market takes a steep dive, don't sell everything and run for the hills. Don't. 10 ways to protect your portfolio from fluctuating markets. That's one of our main talking points. And that ties into another talking point that I'm going to talk about. Expect some volatility this week. That's going to be one of the talking points. Funds are holding cash. Did you see how much? I want to talk about that. Mutual funds we're talking about. And how to be the millionaire next door. That's a book, by the way, The Millionaire Next Door. If you haven't read it, it's a very good book. But I'm going to go over some of the principles that will get you to be a millionaire next door. Okay? Those are going to be your talking points. The market was up again today. It's the fourth day in a row. Dow was up 76, the NASDAQ up 33, and the S&P up 9. And it started with the positive news coming out of the EU-Greek talks. I don't know if I would be counting your chickens at this point. It sounds like they're counting the chickens before you hatch kind of thing going on here. Because you've got to get this past the Greek parliament. We'll know that this week. You got to have some big hurdles to overcome yet before the Greeks get one penny. I'm not so sure they can overcome those hurdles. I mean, remember I talked about you probably have a last-minute deal, and it looks like that's what we had, but I'm not sure if that deal will go through. I'm not convinced yet that that's done. I still think it's a 50-50 chance that it won't. So that's what happened this week, and that's what's causing this little market rally that we're having. That was the spark, anyways. And, of course, we're in earnings season, so we're looking at earnings. We had some economic news. It's going to be a pretty busy week in economic news. And retail sales was the most important report, and I thought that was fairly weak. That didn't seem very strong to me. So we'll see. We'll have more news coming out as the week goes on. Here we are Tuesday, so we got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. How much risk are you comfortable taking? There can be a plus side to investment risk. It leaves open the possibility for gain, of course. It's a balancing act, really. It's a measure of your capacity for risk. How do you measure that? And we do have a tool on our website that you can use for free that will measure how much risk, and it will score your risk tolerance from 0 to 99 or 0 to 100. And you can see what risk you're comfortable with, and they'll give you a number. And just so you can relate that number to the market, the stock market, we can put portfolios in on the other side of that, and it will score the portfolio. And if you just bought an index fund of the S&P 500, that score would be 80. 80, a risk score. If you want to take it, you can use it for free. Just go to investtalk.com.
Hi, this is Chris from Louisville, Kentucky. I'd like you guys to do an analysis on Gilead, G-I-L-D. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about biotech, and it's in a bubble right now. But Gilead really is one of the leaders in this industry. The fundamentals look phenomenal on them. And I wanted to really take a strong position. It looks like a pretty decent buy point, in my opinion. But I wanted to get y'all's analysis on Gilead. Thanks.
Gilead Sciences, Inc. develops therapeutics to treat viral, fungal, respiratory, and cardiovascular disease. It's a $172 billion company. That's a big. That's very, very big. They do about $7.5 billion in sales a quarter. So, you know, that's still a pretty expensive stock on a price-to-sales basis. On a P.E. basis, not so expensive. They're going to make $11.06 a share at $117 stock. That means a P.E. is about 10 or 11. Return on equity is 99. It's very good. Why? And the stock has done very, very well in the last year or two, and it had a small pullback and had a pretty big update today. So, yeah, I agree that this probably is a buy point. Why isn't it trading for more with the growing, you know, 50%, 100% a quarter for the last four quarters, 50 to 100? Why isn't it selling at a much higher P.E. ratio? And the answer is because they are dependent on just a very few drugs and very expensive drugs. And the worry was that maybe the Fed will, you know, remember the Federal Reserve, federal government is getting more and more involved in healthcare. And so they can put the squeeze on the drugs that are being dispensed. Squeeze meaning prices or the Federal Reserve, federal government with the Medicare and everything is becoming more and more powerful in the drug industry, saying can approve or disapprove of drugs being sold. Not like the FDA where they actually can put drugs on the market, but what the Medicare and Medi-Cal will actually pay for. And Gilead's main drug is very, very expensive. So the fear was that sales may not be as strong. And maybe it's a reasonable fear, but you know, it's a really good looking company. I think the financials look very strong on the company. Gilead, G-I-L-D is the symbol, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The market was kind of buoyant today. I thought it acted pretty well with the news that was out because we had retail sales weren't that strong that came out this morning. The numbers weren't that strong. So why? I mean, they were below expectations and they kind of downgraded the last 2 months a little bit. And if you took out auto sales and gasoline sales, they still weren't very good. So it wasn't on that. The market didn't move up on that. So what was left? Well, you know, there wasn't a lot of news out there to push it, in my opinion. Then you know, I read the news pretty religiously all day long, and I didn't see anything that would make this market go up. Other than, you know, there's still good feelings about the Greek thing being settled. Maybe there were feelings of comfort about the Iran deal made with the six countries, including us, about their nuclear aspirations. Maybe that gave the market some comfort. I don't know. It was kind of different. Fourth day in a row up. We're still not up to new highs, or not even that close to new highs. So we're still in a trading range. And we've been fluctuating from the top of the range down to the bottom of the range, down to the top of the range. But one of these days we're going to break out up or break down. And I think we're going to do that in the next, you know, couple months. We'll see it. I have a new day for portfolio checkup, August 4th in San Jose. I will be with a limited number of our listeners on August 4th. Save your spot. Make an appointment. Go to investtalk.com. You're listening to Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART is our number.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Keep your goals clear, build wealth, maintain a steady income, and preserve your assets. Four keys to managing cash through retirement. That's our talking point for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you'll join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about financially? I'll be happy to discuss it. How about 10 ways to protect your portfolio? Here's some against fluctuating markets. And here's these ways are really talking about managing risk is what they're doing. And if you have a margin account, you're on margin, get out of margin. You get a margin call, you can see how painful that would be. If you have a margin, you're on margin, meaning you're borrowing money, get out of that. Raise a little bit of cash, that will help. Also gives you, ammunition to buy into the market after it's, fallen. If possible, try to hold investments. Don't move in the same direction of the market. Okay? Try to have some, assets, investments that don't necessarily go up and down with the market. Currencies don't necessarily go up and down with the market. Some commodities don't necessarily go up and down the market. Bonds don't. If you have a substantial bond holdings, shorten the duration, make them shorter, because interest rates move up and down. The long bonds move up and down in value much faster than the short duration bonds. If you have junk bonds, upgrade them to non-junk. Don't have the junk, because if you have an economic slump, junk bonds have high default rates. Move away from overcrowded trades. That means stocks that everybody just loves and have run up the price to horrendous levels. Rebalance your assets regularly. Don't let anything get out of, too much of any one thing. And prepare yourself psychologically for the ups and downs of the market. Just don't react to them. You don't react. You don't let your emotions to make your decisions for you. Believe me, that's hard to do. Most people can't do it. So those are just some of the ways you can help protect your portfolio. You can also put in a short position, which will go up if the market goes down. You don't have to buy a whole portfolio, just a small portion of it. So you're protecting against volatility. This part will go up exactly the same amount as this part goes down. That's hedging. Okay, different kinds of hedge techniques. Learn how to do that. And there's some of the ways you can help protect yourself. 888-99-CHART, we're going to go talk to Dan in San Mateo. How you doing, Dan?
Doing great. Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question about dividends.
Okay.
When a dividend is paid, I hear a lot of people saying that dividend stocks are good. And when a dividend stock pays out the dividend, it lowers the stock price. It actually comes out of the stock price. So
correct.
In the long term, how am I really making any money with dividend stocks when every time I get my dividend, I'm losing my share price?
Well, because the company is giving you some of its assets, right? Giving back to you some of its assets. And now you take that money and reinvest it back in the company or reinvest it in some other company. But it does go down the exact amount of the dividend payout. But a dividend is a positive action, and psychologically, people push stock prices up when they pay dividends. So you'll find they'll recover the dividend fairly short order in general. That dividend is recovered. So it's not, even though they're paying, you're taking out a value of the company because they're paying it to you, there are benefits to give you back that money that you can reinvest in the same company or and buy more shares or some other company. Okay.
It does feel like they're paying me back with my own money, though, and it feels like, taking a little piece of what I originally invested and giving it back to me. It doesn't feel like a win,
I understand that, and there's some, there are dividend stocks that pay dividends, which they are giving back your own money. So that's why I like a payout ratio of 60% or less, meaning they have to have earnings, and when they have earnings, they're not paying more than 60% to you as a form of dividend, so they can reinvest at least 40% of that into the company to keep it growing. So that's why I kind of have that rule. I don't like the big payout ratio. Pay 90% is the REITs, and there's companies that do pay back. They issue more stock just to give you a dividend. That makes no sense. Good call. Thanks for the question. Good question, Dan. 888-99-CHART. Yeah, so not every dividend is created equal, people. Not every dividend is created equal. You have to make sure they're paying it out of earnings and they're growing their earnings. and they're not paying out of, you know, they issued some more stocks or borrowed the money through a bond or a bank just to pay the dividend. That makes no sense. Auto companies did that for years. Kept borrowing money, and just to pay the dividend and maintain the dividend. Why? Why would you do that? Why to borrow money to pay your dividend? Now, I can give you one reason why. What if the money is so cheap? And if an Apple, for instance, Apple did not want to, they wanted to pay a dividend, but they didn't want to bring money back to the United States from overseas because then they'd have to pay taxes on it. But they wanted to pay a dividend. So what did they do? They borrowed money to pay the dividend. They don't need the money to pay it borrow, but it was cheaper than paying the taxes. So they're, you know, I wish it was simple. It just never is. It doesn't. It's just not a simple, you know, yes or no kind of thing. It's just not. Coming up next half hour, Invest Talk Personal, how a couple retired at 58 and thinks you can do it too. Do you think you can do it too? They think you can. That's coming up next in the next half hour segment. I'm financial advisor Steve Pisa. You can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART. So, funds, mutual funds, are holding the most cash they've held since 2008. Mutual funds are holding the most cash they've ever held since 2008 when the market crashed. Now, how much do you think that is as a percentage of their assets? Well, you'd be surprised. It's only 5.5%. So, it's not a lot of cash. But it is a level that is, you know, pretty high. If you think about it, we're not in a recession, and they have all this cash on the sides. Now, that might be bullish, because that cash needs to be put to work. 42% of the people, there was a survey going along with this cash level, 42% of the people. And this was a survey of 149 portfolio managers. So 42% of them felt that the economy will strengthen over the next 12 months. 42%. The problem with that is a month ago it was 55%. So in a month they went from 55% thinking the economy would strengthen over the next 12 months to 42%. Less than half now. Does that mean they think a recession is coming? So that's why maybe they have all that cash. They're producing cash. But from a contrarian point of view, you would think, okay, that cash has got to come back in the market sometime. And that would be cash that could drive up prices. But if you're a contrarian. So it's just kind of interesting how money managers, and this is 150 of them or so, 149, thought about this, mutual funds and money managers, of what's going on in the economy. Now, could it be because of, you know, the Greek thing and then the Chinese market falling apart? Well, they were asked that, of course, and those were the two things they put on the top of their list. Chinese stock market falling apart and the Greek debacle. So I thought that was an interesting little survey. Expect volatility this week. I want to talk about volatility. Why should there be more volatility this week? Well, we've already seen Monday and Tuesday be pretty volatile, but how about the rest of the week? So our first priority is answering your questions, of course. Let's pick up the call that came in before today's program. Our 24-hour listener line is always open, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Adam. I'm a podcast listener. I have a question for you about some energy companies. I've been interested in buying a position in a major oil company. I've looked at some of the larger companies out there, BP, Dutch Oil, Shell, Total, ExxonMobil, Chevron. ExxonMobil and Chevron look the most appealing to me, but I'm having a little trouble deciding which might be a better purchase. Exxon looks like it might be a little more profitable. Chevron looks a little cheaper to me. So I just want to get your opinion on them, which if either you thought might be a reasonable long-term holding. Thank you. I enjoy your show.
Now, if you are going to ask me between Chevron and Exxon which one you would buy, I would probably, I like them both, by the way. I'd probably lean on Chevron at this point. Now, why would I lean on Chevron versus Exxon? Well, one thing, Chevron pays a 4.5% dividend and Exxon pays a 3.5% dividend. So 1% more. So both of them are huge integrated oil companies. I just think that Chevron is probably a little bit better run. For instance, you know, Chevron, let me take a look. I'm going back and forth. But Exxon does have a better return on equity than Chevron. Exxon has a little bit less debt. I don't know. It's a toss-up, really. I just think that I'd take the extra 1% dividend because I think they're both really solid, and I know they both are not going to lower their dividend. So why don't you buy both? By the way, I'm not recommending you buy them right this minute. I'm just asking if you're going to buy them, why not both? Joe, San Francisco. How you doing, Joe?
Doing fine, Steve. Got a kind of a two-part question for you.
Sure.
Do you have any statistics on, say, overall in the U.S., how an investor does having a financial advisor versus not having, in other words, working the account, his account himself?
Okay. Okay, well, I do have surveys and statistics for 401ks. When 401ks are managed by an individual for, I think that went back like 10 years, versus a manager, and the individual underperforms the manager by about half. I have those statistics in my office that do that, but that's the only statistics I have as far as comparing a managed account versus a non-managed account. A managed account by an individual in his 401k versus he hires someone to do it for him. It's about half. And it's like substantially less. So.
Okay. The other thing is when an investor has a financial manager, financial advisor, typically does a financial advisor do the buying and selling? In other words, control the account with respect to changes, you know, buying and selling funds or stocks or what have you. Uh-huh. Is that typical for the advisor to do that, or does the investor make the move based on his or her advice?
The individual investor usually never makes the buys and sells physically themselves. But there are two major branches of investment advisors. One is they make the buys and sells decisions on their own for you automatically. In other words, they don't talk to you about it, but they talk to you about what kind of portfolio you want, aggressive growth, do you want an income portfolio, what kind, you know, they try to discuss and make sure they know what you want, and then they manage the portfolio to that type of risk that you want. And the other one is an investment advisor would call you up every time before he buys or sells something, and he will talk to you about it. Say, we are recommending you go buy ExxonMobil today, and we think that's a really good choice, so I'd like to go ahead and buy that in your portfolio, but I need your permission to do that. So one is the investment advisor manages your portfolio to a level that you've discussed with him and the type of program you want to be in. And the other is the investment advisor calls you up for every buy and sell decision. So you have to decide which one you like, you know, that you would rather go with. And I'll tell you this, the one that usually the advisor calls you up and suggests you buy or sell, he really is telling you what to do. Let's buy and sell that. And you usually say, okay, because you don't know. That's why you hired him to make those kind of decisions, right? So you agree with him every time he calls up. But then again, when something goes bad, he says, well, we talked about that. That's why we bought it. You know, we bought it for this. Yeah. It just didn't work. You know, he gets to blame you for some of his problems that he's picking.
Okay. Your last caller prompted a question.
Sure.
Chevron and ExxonMobil, I guess you're discussing. Do you think that now would be a good time to buy some Chevron?
Honestly, I think it's a good time to start buying a little bit in either or one of those. They have gone down pretty strong, right? We know that. And the question is, is this the bottom of it? Have they done? Well, you know, I think we might be getting awful close. I can't tell you for sure. You might wait a little bit to see if it, you know, starts to come back up. I mean, had a good day today. You know, it was up nicely today. But you might want to wait a few days. My thinking is, Joe, is if the market's going to correct this summer, that's kind of when I want to buy these things. Because if the whole market corrects, it'll bring them down with them. Also bring it, you know, everything usually goes down. If the market corrects and these don't go down, then that's a real strong buy signal to me.
I got it. Okay. Do you have time for one more question?
Well, make it quick.
Okay. What's your overall opinion of mutual fund in the healthcare industry?
I think it's the healthcare industry is going to do well. I think it's going to do well because the government is going to support it with, you know, the Obamacare, and depending on what part of the healthcare industry. But overall, you know, the HMOs and the PPO kind of companies, you know, the health insurance companies, I think they're going to do well. They won't lose money.
I was referring to Vanguard's healthcare fund.
That's funds. They probably will do well because I think the whole healthcare industry is going to do just fine with Obamacare. Prices are not going to go down. They're going to go up. Healthcare prices. Okay. So they're not going to get hurt. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thank you. Well, he got away with a lot of questions. So that's okay. I don't mind. Time for Invest Talk Personal, everybody. The day-to-day money choices that can help you have a lasting impact on your finances. Here, there's one couple that retired. There was a couple that retired at 58 years old. They had $2.1 million in the bank. And their story was on CNN Money. How did they do it? And I actually have a talking point that kind of coincides. It's called the, you know, How to Be the Millionaire Next Door. Well, this is how they do it. And this is very basic, very basic. Essentially, they spent less money than they earned. But what did they physically do? First of all, they took some really radical steps. They sold their house in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and moved to Michigan, where they could pay cash for their house, $200,000 house, paid cash for it, and that got rid of a monthly mortgage. Next, they saved a lot of money in their 401ks. They maxed it out every year. Then they saved up to 25% of their income every year for a number of years. They lived well beneath their means. They didn't eat out much. They had old cars. They bought food in bulk. And, you know, their car was 11 years old. They paid cash for it. By the way, I've always paid cash for my cars, except for my first one. My first one I financed. It was a $495. And I financed that car. Hated it. Hated paying that monthly payment. But that's how you do it. You can do it. You know, you just live below your means. And you save a lot of money. And some people will say, I have relatives that I can give you a quote of a number of years ago, maybe going on 15 years ago. Said, well, I'd rather spend it now while I'm young and can enjoy it. That's a quote. I'd rather spend it now while I'm young and can enjoy it. Just so you know, that person is now about my age, 62, has virtually no savings, and no retirement 401k, and still living well beyond their means. What do you think that's going to do when that person's 70, 80? What happens when they can't work? What if no one wants to hire them, the independent contractor? That's the problem. You got to look toward the future. That's Invest Talk Personal. Do you have a question you'd like me to answer or a topic you want me to discuss? Give me a call or contact Steve. Click on Contact Steve at InvestTalk.com.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, I'm from San Diego and my name is Brenda. And I had a question regarding how do you evaluate future earnings per share that are predicted by a company, and what is the validity generally between those predictions and what really ends up happening? Thank you.
That's a very good question. First of all, most companies try not to be too aggressive in their predictions because they don't want to be sued for making false reports. So a lot of the predictions are coming from analysts. And I'll tell you this, experts are always wrong. I wrote that in my book, you know, that experts are always wrong, above average investing for the average investor. Because they guess high. They want to be positive. They just are wrong. Now, how wrong? How reliable are those numbers? They're within the ballpark, generally speaking. Let's put it that way. And that's the only thing you can use is their estimates. You can't figure it out. You know, so you use the estimates knowing that's exactly what it is, an estimate. And it could be wrong and probably is wrong, but it's within the realm of reality. Now, when you're looking at stocks and you're trying to evaluate them, it depends on the stock itself. If you're looking at a stock like, you know, ExxonMobil, we were just talking about, earnings can be fairly predictable. You know, if you're looking at a company like Tesla, earnings are not predictable because it's very high. Sales are very high, and you don't know how much money they're going to spend. It's much more difficult to guess what their earnings are going to be, and it's much more difficult for the experts to do that. But, you know, if you're Johnson & Johnson, very stable company, earnings are very predictable. Now, but you've got all these things that can influence. If you go into recession, you know, the earnings estimates are kind of out the window. No one, you know. So it's difficult. I wish there was an easy way to know how well and predictable something is, but it's not. It's not. You're never going to get it. All you can use is the next year's estimates. Look at the economy. That's why I teach the economy a lot. I teach investors, look at the economy. Look at the economy. What's happening with the economy? Because I know what happens with the economy translates to what happens to the economy, to the stock, to the companies in the economy, their earnings. The economy is growing, their earnings will grow. If the economy is growing very fast, their earnings will grow faster. But then again, when interest rates start to rise, that causes the economy to slow eventually. And that will cause the stocks prices to fall. And it will always happen in advance before you actually see the numbers come out in the companies. It's complex. There's a lot of different facets that play important parts in different parts of the economy. That's one reason I like doing it, by the way. We do have time for another couple of questions. The lines are always open, and you can call right now. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART. I'll do my best to answer your question before the end of the show. This is InvestTalk.
Our podcast distribution, always made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And if you have a question on our talking point today, there is a link to a related article on our website homepage. Or you can get a note to Steve or Justin about it, and they will respond. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin.
888-992-4278. Time to give me a call. We'll be happy to talk to you. Expect some volatility the rest of this week. We've already seen volatility in the last few days, but we're going to have more. Tomorrow, China comes out with a second quarter GDP number tomorrow morning. So we're going to see that. That probably will come out prior to the market opening. So that probably will have some impact. Tomorrow also, Yellen is going to speak and talk about, probably get some hints of what about she's going to do with interest rates. The Greek Parliament is going to decide that tomorrow, next day, I don't know exactly when, but they're going to decide on whether they're going to take the deal, leave it or not. Remember, the leadership has agreed to take the deal, but they got to go through the parliament, and they have to decide this week. There's pressure coming from the EU to make decisions, especially from Germany, because Germany has, you know, Germany carries more than anybody else, the debt of Greece. So they're the ones that's really, you know, in charge. This is what happens when a country, you become so indebted. And it happens to individuals, and it happens to countries, states, counties, municipalities. You know, you get so indebted that your choices are very limited. And that's what Greece has. So, and finally, this week, Bank of Canada is going to decide whether to raise or lower interest rates. I don't know if that will have much impact. I think the GDP number from China will be more important, and the Greek thing. And maybe Yellen's speech. But to me, it all adds up to, we're probably going to see some good volatility. That doesn't mean down market, everybody. It means up or down. Volatility doesn't mean one direction. It's both directions. It can be all down, or it could be all up, or it can be a combination, up and down. So just expect volatility is what I'm suggesting. We're going to get it this week. We've already seen it Monday and Tuesday. We're going to see more. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you still can call and ask the question. We'll play it on the next InvestTalk. We're always here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, this is Bhavesh from Atlanta. Love your show, and I listen to it over the podcast. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question on the IRAs, the traditional and the Roth. Is there any rule on when and how you can take out the principal that you invested? So let's say I put $5,000 this year. Can I take that $5,000 out next year, or even I cannot take that money out? Let me know, and I look forward to listening to the answer on the next show.
You can always take money out of either a Roth IRA or an IRA, a regular IRA. You can always take it out. It's how it's you're penalized or taxed is the issue. So you're probably asking, can I take money out of a regular IRA and not get penalty or tax? And the answer is no. You have to be a certain age, retirement age, before you can take money out without a penalty or a tax on a regular IRA. A Roth IRA, there's different rules. And I'm not an expert, but I believe, I'm not positive, that you can take the money that you put in without a penalty before your retirement age. But I don't know that for sure, because that's not my area of expertise. I get asked IRA and 401k and 403b and 457s all questions all the time. And it's just, they change the rules, and, you know, it's hard to keep track of all the rules. So I know the basic rules, but it's not my area. You know, it's just not. So you probably should talk to an accountant to give you a better answer than I did. So how do you become a millionaire? Be the Millionaire Next Door. And the Millionaire Next Door is a book. It's been out for years now. It's a very easy book to read, and I suggest that you all read it. And as I talked earlier on Invest Talk Personal, it's really about consumption, about your personal consumption. You reduce your consumption. It's as simple as that. Spend less than you earn. Buy a smaller house. Keep your cars so they're old. Don't keep buying and refinancing. Don't buy that new expensive watch. Don't go out and have a lavish lifestyle. Keep it simple. 80% of the millionaires are ordinary people in the United States. They're just regular people. They live next door. That's what that book is all about. Spend less than you earn. It can't get any simpler than that. Save as much as you can. Spend less than you earn. And, you know, I hear it all the time. Well, I need this, I need that. Well, there's a big difference between needs and wants. And most people are talking about wants, not needs. Anyways, if you want to be a millionaire, that's how you do it. We're out of time today. If you have more questions about any money matter, use our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART, and just tell me what the question is, and we'll play it on the show. So, and if you'd like to see more about The Millionaire Next Door, go to our recommended book list section on InvestTalk.com. It's a really neat book. It's small. You can read it fast. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and enjoy your evening, and let's talk again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.